21-1678 Bell v. United States. Mr. Berger, please proceed.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to remove my... Yes, thank you. So this appeal hinges on a very, very narrow decision point. And the issue is whether the Court of Claims has jurisdiction based on a substantive claim by these appellants that they're entitled to more than 1 year of a relocation bonus. They each received 1 year of a relocation bonus. The service agreements were for a total of 3 years, and the narrow issue is whether they're entitled to a 3 year relocation bonus multiplied by their first year salary, or 1 year.
So I'm having a little bit of a hard time seeing where the statute and regulation are money mandating when in fact they use language like may.
Understood. So we'll concede, right? We'll concede that the statute and the regulations standing alone are not money mandated. So that's not the issue that I see here. The statute and the regulations, though, require that the DEA or the United States implement a plan before they decide to give these relocation bonuses. And when we look at the plan, the language of the plan, and together with the statute and together with the regulation, create a money mandated obligation. The statute and the regulation have language that indicates that the bonus shall not exceed 25% of the annual rate of base pay multiplied by the years of service. But the plan that is required to be implemented before these bonuses are paid states something different. It doesn't track that language of shall not exceed. The plan at section B5 says that, quote, once a decision is made to pay the bonus in the discretion of the DEA, and we concede that, the DEA may, the bonus, quote, may be paid up to 25% of base pay, comma,
Can you tell me which section are you looking at?
Yes.
In the plan? Did you say B5?
Yeah.
And what page can I find that at?
Okay. In the opening brief, it's addendum page 11. It starts with five relocating employees, may be paid amounts up to 25%, and then comma, multiplied by. Arguably, agency reserves discretion to pay a percentage up to 25%. The issue here is once that decision is made to pay a certain percentage, the language, the plain text of the plan indicates that that percentage, that annual pay, must be multiplied by the years of the service agreement. It does not say that the amount is up to 25% of base pay. It doesn't say and up to 3 years or 4 years of the service agreement. It says up to 25%. Once the discretion is exercised to give a percentage, it must be multiplied by 3 years or 4 years, however many years of the service agreement.
Where's the must?
That's the mandate.
I see relocating employees may be paid. Where's the must?
Well, it says may be paid amounts up to 25%. We have that, and then there's a comma, multiplied by the length of his or her service agreement. So once they decide to pay the 25% or the 15% or whatever percent, it must be multiplied.
I still don't see the must. Where is the should, shall, must?
There is no should, shall.
Okay, it's just may.
Agreed.
Multiplied by.
Comma, pause, multiply.
It's because there's no may before multiplied, that it must mean something other than may.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely. There is no discretion. Multiply it. That's the mandate.
Do you have any cases where it's similar to this, where the failure to include a word like may was interpreted as meaning shall?
No.
Okay.
No. We have many cases, you know, which have been cited by my adversary as well as myself, in which this court has stated that statutes that use the word may can be interpreted as shall if you make inferences with instructions, orders, and supplemental orders and instructions that go along with the statute. So a may can be converted to shall, even without, but in this case, looking at the plain text, it does not appear to be any discretion at all, because once they decide what that percentage is, it's to be multiplied by the length of the hire service agreement.
Is your argument based on your view that there was in fact an agreement, that there was a contract that provided there had to be at least some amount paid to the employees?
It's not dependent upon whether there was a service agreement or not, because the plan dictates and requires that there be a service agreement. There were service agreements. They're attached to the appendix in the opening brief.
But the contract issue is not appealed before us.
No.
That's not before us.
That's correct. A breach of contract is not before the court. That's correct. The issue is whether the service agreements conform to the plan, whether the plan trumps the service agreements. The agency was required to issue service agreements that conform to the plan. If it conformed to the plan, each individual would have received, in this case, 25% of their base annual pay multiplied by their years of service, which were 3. They only received 1 year. My point is that when we get to the comma multiplied by, there doesn't appear to be any discretion on the part of the agency to decide what that multiple should be. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? All it says is multiplied by the length of service. You have to multiply it by the amount of years of service. That's what it says. Now, it doesn't track the statute. The statute talks about, well, you know, you could pay these bonuses, may not exceed up to 25% multiplied by. But when you look at the plan, we don't see shall not exceed. It says.
But doesn't, Mr. Berger, isn't the plan to which you've been referring, doesn't it really just reflect what is in the statute, which you agree, and the regulation is not money mandating? It just says, you know, you can pay up to 25%, and to effectuate that, you multiply, you go through this multiplication process.
Okay. Well,
how is that? I guess my concern is, or my problem, I don't see how that point in the plan somehow serves to convert the statute and the regulation into money mandating items.
I don't see how we can deviate from the plain text. It's obvious that DEA opted to pay the percentage and to also pay a multiple of that percentage. There's nothing in the statute or the regulation that in any way precludes them from doing that. It just say that it can't exceed the 25%. And the multiple of the service years. It just says it can't exceed it. But nothing in the statute of the regulation says, how do I calculate? What am I going to calculate? What am I going to pay these people to go to these hard-to-fill places?
But isn't the method of calculation something really just an implementation point? It doesn't matter. It doesn't really relate, does it, to whether the whole program is mandatory?
Well, I would
or
say
money mandating, I should say.
If that's what the intent was, they should have then characterize the plan as, hey, you have the discretion to pay anything you want, not to exceed X, which is tracking the language. That's not what they did. They say, you can pay up to 25%, but when you figure out that percentage, you multiply it by the length of the years of service. And in each of these cases, the length of the years of service were 3 years, not 1 year. Each of them got only 1 year, and they deserve to be paid the full 3 years for these hard-to-fill posts.
Mr. Berger, so you agree, just so I make sure I understand, you agree that whether they were entitled to this relocation pay is discretionary and not money mandated.
That's correct.
And you also agree that the 25% is discretionary.
That's correct.
But your view is that the multiplier is money mandated.
Is a mandate. Pick the percentage and multiply it.
And your view is even, I'm going to assume for a minute, this says shall be multiplied. And it actually says that.
That's my point.
I'm going to assume it. I don't necessarily agree with you that it says shall be multiplied.
I understand.
But assuming it does, your view is that it doesn't matter at all, that everything before that is discretionary and not money mandated.
That's correct. It's been converted by this plan from discretionary to mandatory.
Do you agree as a matter of law that our cases say when the statute and the reg are discretionary, which you concede by themselves they are, that it creates a very strong, that's the quote the government extracted from one of our cases, the words very strong presumption that the whole thing is not money mandating?
Rebuttable. I agree.
Okay. So there's a very strong presumption based on the discretionary language, but you think your entire argument hinges on whether we conclude the very strong presumption is overcome by the language in paragraph 5.
That's correct, and that's what this entire case hinges on.
Well, let's save the rest of your time for rebuttal.
Yes, thank you.
Let's hear from Mr. Carson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The Court should affirm the trial court's decision, which correctly held that it lacked subject matter jurisdiction over appellant's statutory claim because the statute and regulations at issue in this appeal are discretionary and not money mandating. Appellants have already conceded that the statute and the implementing regulations are discretionary, and the issue comes down to Section B5 of the DEA plan. The trial court, in examining Section B5 of the DEA plan, correctly found that its language was discretionary in nature, and that all that Section B5 does is sets a maximum amount of the amount that can be paid to an employee as a relocation incentive payment. Section B5 provides that, as the court has already gone over, that relocating employees may be paid amounts of up to 25% of the employee's basic pay at the beginning of the service period, multiplied by the length of his or her service agreement, calculated as stated in 5 CFR Section 575-209. 5 CFR Section 575-209, which appellants concede is discretionary in nature, tracks the language of that regulation, tracks the language of Section B5 in the DEA plan, almost identically. And all these two provisions do, again, are establish the maximum amount that can be paid in an RIP. For example, if an employee enlists for a 3-year service period and her annual rate of basic pay for the ease of math at the beginning of the period is $100,000. The maximum amount of that employee's RIP for that 3-year period is $75,000. Excuse me. And the way you would calculate that based on the section is that you take the $100,000 basic rate pay, multiply it by 3 years, you get $300,000 and you take 25% of it. And that's $75,000. So that's the maximum. But it's discretionary, the amount that's paid as an RIP. And both the plan and the regulations and the statute go through all the factors that go into that flexible discretionary
nature. Mr. Berger's argument is that the word multiplied by doesn't have the word may in front of it. So once you decide to award 25%, you have to multiply it by the number of years. There's no word may. Multiplied is a verb, correct?
Correct.
Right. May is a verb.
Modifier.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, same idea. But so the idea, his idea, as far as I understand, is that under the English language, the word may modifies whether you are going to award 25%, but it doesn't modify whether you're going to multiply it by the number of years. That's what I understand his argument to be. So do you have any... You started by saying, let's start with easy math, and you messed up the math.
Right.
Can you do a little better with English?
I'm sorry?
Can you do a little better with English?
Well, Mr. Berger wants to read, I think, words into Section B5 of the plan. Again, whether it's Section B5 of the plan, which, again, tracks the language of the regulation that appellants concede is discretionary, all it's doing is establishing the maximum amount that can be paid under the regulation. And to establish that maximum amount, you do take, and I guess it's important to remember too, is that, this is done at the very beginning of, before the employee ever enters into, the service agreement, enters into their period of service with the DEA. The amount is calculated and it's memorialized in the written service agreement. And that's what was done here. And again, the amount is, it's discretionary nature. It's flexible because there are a whole lot of factors that can go into the amount that is to be paid. And the plan is specific about that and explicit about that. And so are the statute and the regulations. Some of those factors are, is there money in the budget? In the agency's budget for the RIP, how much money is available for relocation incentive payments, and that can affect what the amount that's paid in an RIP. The employee.
Oh, excuse me, sorry to jump in on you there, but I had one question that I didn't want to forget about. you attached to your brief the DEA manual, which is kind of a supplement to the DOJ plan that Mr. Berger was discussing with the panel that you've been discussing. That, and at page 7 of your supplemental appendix, you direct our attention to section 2575.39 of the manual. What role does the manual play in this, and what language do you point to in the manual, that section, as helping your case?
Yes, Your Honor. The DEA manual, as we set forth in our brief, it's another example of how relocation incentive payments are discretionary in nature. The plan itself, looking specifically at the section on supplemental appendix page 7, Your Honor, that you pointed out, 2575.39 payment criteria. Again, it uses the discretionary language of may. A relocation incentive may not be paid until the employee establishes a residence. It goes through some of these criteria. Relocating employees may be paid amounts up to 25% of the employee basic pay, as defined by 5 CFR section 575.202, at the beginning of the service period, multiplied by the length of the employee's service agreement. So again, it's language that tracks the DEA plan and it tracks the regulation, 575.209.
His argument would be the same for this as it is for B5, that the word multiply doesn't say may. That you can decide whether to award up to 25%, but once you decide to award 25%, you're required to multiply it by the number of years up to 4 years.
Again, the the plan does not, it doesn't include that it's, again, it's if you read it, it's setting forth the maximum amount that can be paid. It's up to, the employee can't, may be paid up to this amount. And to determine the maximum amount, you do take the length of the service period, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. You multiply that by what the employee's basic pay is at the beginning of the service agreement. And you take 25% of that amount, and that's the maximum. But there is no minimum. It could be zero. Relocation incentive payment, it doesn't require that a relocation incentive payment is paid. It can be any amount from zero up to that maximum. The maximum is calculated by, like I said, by taking whatever it is, the service length of the service period, multiply it by what the person's salary is, and you take 25% of it, and that's the maximum. But it's not saying that maximum is what that person has
to
pay.
Even if we didn't agree with you regarding the plain language of either, whether it be the manual or the plan, B5, wouldn't your argument be that it takes a very, I'd have to not just find the language potentially ambiguous, potentially susceptible to his proposed interpretation. I'd have to find the language very strongly and clearly as he wants it to be in order to overcome the very strong presumption that our court created when you have a statute and a reg that are not money mandating, that are discretionary. And so that isn't part of your argument, as I understand it, that, I mean, you want, like, it's like you want to go for the home run when all you need is a base hit and then you'll get your RBI and the game's over. But you don't need the home run. All you need is for this language not to be crystal clear in his favor. It just, if it's susceptible to any ambiguity, then don't you win?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with you. You're right. To your point, the appellants have a high burden to overcome the presumption that with all of the discretionary language within the statute, regulations, and in the plan, that the presumption is that this is discretionary in nature. You're correct. And for all those reasons, unless the court has further questions, the government asks that you affirm the trial court's dismissal.
Thank you, Mr. Carson. Mr. Berger has some remaining rebuttal time.
Yes.
Thank you. I'd like to make one correction to my adversary's point. The language in the statute or in the regulation at 575.209 is not tracked in B5 or even in their own manual. The language in the statute and in the regulation point out that the amount of the bonus cannot exceed 25% of the base pay for the first year multiplied by services. Cannot exceed, shall not exceed. When you get to B5, and even when you get to the manual, which is on page 4 of the agency's separate appendix, it's the same language as B5. The amount that may be paid for an individual incentive is generally up to 25% in effect at the beginning, multiplied by the number of years. I would say, and I do say, that distinction between the language, the choosing of the different texts, abandoning that shall exceed language in favor of determining the percentage to be multiplied, overcomes that very heavy presumption. I think it's very clear what the DEA planners decided to do. Very clear. And I also want to point out that the judge in the Federal Claims Court, when they looked at the B5 language, the judge looked at the B5 language, she only went as far as to say up to 25%, but never addressed this issue of the multiplier. So for all these reasons, we think that because there was a concerted effort to distinguish the B5, the plan, from the statute, that there was a determination of a money mandate once they decide what that annual salary was.
Thank you, Mr.
So I want to thank you very much for this time.
Thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.